What are some of the traditional management issues Windows Server administrators deal with, and how does Windows Server 2016 alleviate them?
Well, I think it sort of depends on your scenario and where you're coming from. We've moved from, you know, when we look at Windows 13 years ago with Windows Server 2003, how it was just beginning to move into this sort of command line realm. And now it's more that the OS is very PowerShell centric, very automation centric. And I think it's intended to be much more about reliability, reproducibility, and a lot of the frameworks that are there that are really the center of Windows Server 2016 are sort of evolutions from 2012 and 2012 R2 more than anything else.
In your travels, what have you been hearing about Windows Server 2016? It's no secret that Microsoft wants more people to put workloads into Azure. Has that push to the cloud overshadowed the release of this new server operating system?
I think that is it to a degree. And, you know, when we look at Windows Server, I don't want to degrade what the team did, because I think Windows Server 2016, although it's got some pretty significant licensing changes, it's also got some really amazing enhancements. So I think it's a pretty impressive product in its own right. However, Microsoft's big emphasis, as you noted, is on getting people to Azure. And, you know, that's whether it's Windows, whether it's Linux, whether it's just using other Azure services that are more high level than even caring about what OS it's running on. I think that's really their message. It's about getting people onto their platforms. And Windows Server, for, you know, to be kind of simplistic, is more or less becoming the Azure runtime on premises. If you're running it on premises, if you're running some semblance of a private cloud or your provider, then Windows Server 2016 becomes that foundation. And as Azure Stack arrives later this year, we'll see that really emphasized, where Windows Server is that core pillar, but again, Azure.
When a new Windows Server operating system comes out, the adoption is typically pretty slow, partly for budget or for technical reasons. I've seen some numbers that show Windows Server 2008 still has the largest install base out there. And now that Microsoft has announced that premium assurance plan, some organizations may not consider a migration from Windows Server 2008 until the year 2026. What are some ways that Microsoft can break down that resistance to upgrading the operating system?
I think a lot of it comes down to trying to make the features in the OS compelling enough that as businesses both move legacy applications forward and as they build new applications, they realize that Windows Server 2016 will generally make life easier for them. A lot of the technologies that used to be very fragile and very rough have either gotten more refined or moved into Azure. And I think in general, it's helping businesses realize that direction, that the platform is there for them. And the reality is that, for better or worse, this is the way things happen. In 10 years' time, we'll be talking about people stuck on 2012 R2 and 2016 when new derivations of what actually still an OS on-premises is there. So it's much the same as the client side.
Is part of this reluctance of working with the cloud partly due to the rapid changes with the constant evolution of updates and steady arrival of new features? Also, there's a certain vulnerability of depending on a SaaS app that worked fine yesterday, but today something happened behind the scenes that caused a problem. With on-premises servers, at least you knew when an update had been applied and you could roll it back if trouble hit.
I think it's both Azure and Windows Server 2016, and honestly, Windows 10, you know, just to throw that in there as well. It's that same thing that we see the cadence of these updates and the regularity of them arriving are all sort of overwhelming to people who are used to operating in a more, well, service pack-like schedule. And unfortunately, what this highlights is not that Microsoft needs to change, because this is generally the way things are going to be, albeit, you know, there are probably some changes over time. But in general, it represents the fact that people need to, as they're moving these applications forward, be prepared to start testing on a regular basis and understand how to test when those new updates come out. So whether you're looking at Azure, a new version of Windows Server, and for example, the Nano Server, which you and I have talked about in the past, it's on this rapid servicing schedule versus the regular server platform. So it's very important that people understand how they're testing and take advantage of things like containers, which can conceptually make testing easier and more regular.
For a traditional on-premises Windows shop, do you see Microsoft trying to get a foothold in those data centers by getting people to use some of these other cloud services, such as Azure Backup or Azure Site Recovery, to get administrators more familiar with the cloud?
That's one of the main questions we get from people in our licensing boot camp is, well, I hear a lot about Azure, but what's it good for me? And the main thing that I can tell people today is if you're not interested in building apps on it, there's still a whole other disaster recovery platform, as you highlighted. And so it depends on the specific technology you're looking at. But the story of how you can fail Windows Server 2016 or SQL Server 2016 out to Azure as a backup data center is pretty impressive. And for a lot of businesses who've done enterprise licensing on premises, there's actually some pretty significant cost reductions, and in the case of SQL Server, there may actually not be a cost for running SQL Server itself in Azure. So they need to understand that sort of technology and how Azure can play a role in disaster recovery in particular.
You had mentioned Azure Stack, which has been delayed and revised from what Microsoft had originally planned. It sounds similar to what some other companies have tried, namely VMware with EvoRail, to provide this self-service appliance. But Microsoft is a bit late to the game here. If a company wanted to implement this type of functionality, they probably already are doing it. So why should enterprises care about Azure Stack?
Sure. I think if you look at it, what's interesting is that it changed from early on when they sent out the original beta or early preview bits. It was sort of tried on whatever ramshackle hardware you got lying around, and now we've come full circle to the point that, yes, it's delayed from its original estimate. And it is OEM only, at least in this first incarnation, and probably will continue to be. And I think that's not an illogical thing because it's so centered around the hardware in terms of what it takes advantage of. So at least out of the gate, it's going to be OEM only. You'll buy it from a device manufacturer, one of the three, and it'll work on-prem or in your data center. And to me, that's the key thing about Azure Stack. What's the story? You're right. A lot of people have already either built their own or come up with other solutions, and there's been other technologies that have done it. But what's the difference for Microsoft here? There's a couple of things. First, this is the only one that's the organizationally specific implementation of Azure. So if I'm already an organization that's looking at Azure or I want something on-prem that I can use with a cloud provider and have a standard back and forth, this is really the only one that's going to go that direction. And if you're based on Windows Server today, it's not going to be a big leap because it's, again, based around Windows Server technology from the stack up, although it will look very different, operate very different. But if you're used to Azure and you're used to Windows Server, I think the learning curve for getting to Azure Stack is going to be pretty smooth. Then the question becomes, what do the upfront and long-term costs of running an Azure Stack, let's say on-premises or in my own organization's data center, what do those costs look like? And that's what an organization will have to figure out if Azure Stack makes sense to them.
Last year, Microsoft changed how it licenses Windows Server, and licensing is something that can be tricky when you move workloads back and forth from on-premises and Azure. Is that something that Microsoft needs to make more plain to get organizations into Azure?
Well, it'd be nice if it was, but the reality is we are where we are, and you're right, it is very convoluted. In particular, what we've found in describing licensing is it's easy to describe the way licensing was. It's easy to describe the way licensing is, but the most complicated conversations around licensing actually come from getting from a place to another place. And so describing from somebody or to somebody how you get from Windows Server 2012 R2, which is per processor licensing with client access licenses, to 2016, which is core-based licenses with CALs. It's a very complicated exercise to sit there and explain because they have to understand the licensing, how the infrastructure works, what a core is, et cetera. And it's unfortunate, but it's a complicated exercise. The good thing, though, is that by moving to core-based licensing, although it'll be more expensive for what we'd like to call core dense systems on premises, it at least aligns the licensing so that you're paying the same way you are when you're in Azure. Because when you buy Windows Server, SQL Server, BizTalk in the cloud in Azure, you're paying by the core as a fundamental now anyway.
Now, are there any tools that help administrators keep track of where these Windows Server licenses are when they try to implement a hybrid cloud?
Not really. We see a lot of different SAM auditing tools that each one has weaknesses, each one has strengths. The problem areas are generally very uniform in that things that are hard to count are generally hard to count, and I don't mean that to be shtick, but things like client access licenses, which are still required for Windows Server on-premises, interestingly not for Windows Server when you're running in Azure itself, but those sorts of things are hard to count because they're literally ethereal. You can't get your hands around them. So you'll see some tools that will attempt to count that, but for an organization that wants to be above board, it's unfortunate because that's hard to attest to, and this is really an accounting exercise. It's never a practical exercise of literally typing in a key and making sure that the key is present on each box or anything.
So PowerShell turned 10 years old last year, and despite all its recent development, it seems most administrators would rather just point and click to manage the environment. Microsoft is pushing it, but is PowerShell where an IT staff should concentrate their learning efforts?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It comes down to if you are, if there's this analogy that goes around in the operations world of, you know, don't treat your servers like pets, treat them like cattle. And as impersonal as it may be, that's something I do agree with in the concept that if you're deploying servers one at a time using a GUI click-through UI, you're doing it in a context of sitting there one action per verb, and it's not something that you can reproduce. When that server goes down, it's not something that you can say, well, it's okay, just rerun the script that rebuilds that server. So things like PowerShell and DSC and these fundamentals that Microsoft has built in since Windows Server 2012 that really have gotten more refined in 2016 help organizations do more at scale. And so it's almost, if you aren't training your IT staff in PowerShell, sure, they can continue to exist in a GUI-based world, but it's much like trying to do Excel or to use Excel and not take advantage of VBA or not take advantage of any other macro language aspects to it. You can sit there and add it all up and do the division yourself in your head, or use PowerShell and just shortcut it. There is a giant, frankly, learning curve that I'm personally still struggling to work through, but I believe on the other side it's worth it in terms of the operational efficiency that both the individual can take with them in that position and even in future positions in the Microsoft realm, and within the organization, they can do more faster than they would have historically with the point and click. It's also really important to note that while PowerShell, you know, started with Windows Server Exchange on Windows Server, it has really dramatically evolved. And again, it's this fundamental that's there on Windows Server. It's a key component of Nano Server. It's in Azure. It's in Azure Stack. So the longer people wait to learn it, in some ways, the longer they're going to be holding themselves back from learning the latest technologies and taking advantage of the stuff Microsoft is building.
Well, Microsoft has been very busy of late with a number of new technologies and tools aimed at administrators. So I can imagine there are a lot of people in IT who are experiencing information overload. And do you think all these choices can be a detriment? Will people be willing to embrace something like PowerShell and put a lot of effort into learning it when they may wonder if it will get replaced by something else?
It's a great question, and it's one, personally, again, I struggle with. And to me, I'm inclined to think of this, there's a carousel in Spokane that every time I go by, I'll take my youngest daughter, and she loves to try and grab the ring off of it. Mm-hmm. And that comes up as an analogy to me, because the IT pro needs to enjoy their job, do what they do, be successful at it, watch for the growth of their company, you know, the projects they're working on, and figure out both when the opportunities are there to move the organization's platforms forward, knowing that you can't sit there and stagnate forever, and know when the opportunity is there for them to learn a new technology. And I know it's scary for all of us to consider going out and learning something new when we're pretty comfortable with the way we do things. But it's really important, as this stuff is moving forward so fast, that we constantly be evolving. And also don't let our apps and systems become sedentary, because they become unsecure, unmanageable, and eventually become more of a tether than a benefit.
So are Microsoft certifications still worth pursuing? I know a lot of recruiters won't consider someone unless they have certain certifications. But should administrators concentrate their efforts on these certification tracks, or should they explore other avenues, such as learning how to work in a DevOps environment or picking up some programming skills?
This one might be kind of contentious. I generally feel, I come from a family of teachers, and I think that certifications have served a great purpose for a long time. But I worry, as somebody who even develops and gives regular training, that we struggle to keep up to date, and we do this every 2 months. I struggle with how a modern certification system can help those people be operationally successful. And I know a lot of organizations, you're right, do still look for that. It's a good check mark to make sure on the resume. Does he have an MCSE? Does he have a CISSP? They look for those letters. And they can provide a good balance. And I think especially if your organization is willing to keep you up to date on those certifications, it can make sense. But to me, for the individual, it's becoming a lot more important that you're finding your own road and figuring out what those new languages, new tools, new products, new services that you need to be learning about in order to both make your own job successful, your career successful, and the people you work around more effective.